When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
This, ladies and gentlemen, will be a roll call of action. A roll call of action for unionists who haven't given up on the union, to whom the union in all its parts is the be-all and end-all of our political purpose.
The TUV have hooked up with Reform UK.
From my own point of view, I think unionism has been far too parochial for far too many years. We do need a pan-UK approach. And to have a national party with affiliation and the strength that comes from that.
What's in it for both parties? What did the DUP think of it? And who are Reform UK anyway?
It's basically the reincarnation, if you like, of UKIP. It's the new thing on the right of British politics.
Also, are politicians hung out in Washington for St. Patrick's Day? But it wasn't all smiles.
Personally, yes, I will use the opportunity to talk to anybody that I can talk to in terms of the course of this visit to raise the issue of the fact that the US, one of the most successful US foreign policies has been actually the Irish peace process. And I will be urging the President and others to encourage to take that same approach in terms of the Middle East.
When they're standing with Joe Biden, everybody is smiling except Michelle O'Neill. Now, either she's decided for herself or someone has suggested we do not want to be seen to be enjoying ourselves beside this man because he's very unpopular right now back at home.
Joining me to discuss all of that, no better man than Sam McBride, our Northern Ireland editor. Sam McBride, you're very welcome to the Bell Tell once again. Sam, let's talk politics. We normally mention party political conferences. The TUV had their conference at the weekend. Was there any surprises?
Well, yes, in the sense that it wasn't just Jim Allister denouncing Stormont, denouncing power sharing, denouncing the DUP for having sold out, all the stuff that, you know, I've heard over many years of going to the TUV conference as a journalist. There was something new this time, and it was a link up in electoral terms with Reform UK. This is a new party. Lots of people won't be aware of this party or will know very little about it. It's basically the reincarnation, if you like, of UKIP. It's the new thing on the right of British politics, which is very Eurosceptic, which is very much about trying to say the Tories are not giving people proper conservatism and these people are going to give them it. So it is led by a man called Richard Tice, but there is a suggestion that maybe Nigel Farage himself will come back and lead it before the general election. So it's potentially a very significant political force. It may not get a single MP elected in the election, but it could really hammer the Tories in some marginal seats. And in some polling, it's really getting scarily close from the Conservatives' perspective to where they are. So really starting to eat into their support. So to have a link between the TUV, this, you know, tiny Northern Irish party, right on the fringes of our unionist politics, on that side of the spectrum, to have a link between that party and this new force that somebody like Nigel Farage is closely associated with, is quite something. Are they going to win a single seat? Almost certainly not. But elections aren't simply about winning. They're about influencing other parties. They're about trying to establish a credible brand there for the next election where maybe they will win seats. So something different and something which has discomforted the DUP. They've been out to denounce this, say this is vote splitting. This is about unionist unity, which is required really and not something of this nature. So it's going to be a slightly different general election in Northern Ireland whenever that's called over the next few months.
Reform do have one MP at the moment, isn't it? Someone has defected to them.
Lee Anderson, who was quite a big figure on the right of the Tory. I mean, a former vice chairman of the Tory party, somebody who has this sort of everyman image, loves to be seen in the pub with a pint, talking to working class men, former miner. But actually, when you look at some of what he's achieved, it's fairly scant. So there's a lot of bombast there. There's a lot of attacks on foreigners in a rhetorical sense rather than a literal sense. But actually, he's not somebody who's a great parliamentarian. He's not somebody who would be anywhere near the cabinet, anywhere near a senior position in parliament. The real force behind this, I think, is Nigel Farage, who's not involved. He's outside now, a big figure on GB News, somebody who's very much has got a massive social media following, somebody who's close to an extent with Donald Trump and people on the right of US politics. So this is a more serious force, if you like, than a single backbench MP might suggest right now.
Well, Nigel Farage himself has never managed to get elected to the parliament, so that is something.
And look at the influence he's had. I mean, I think there's a misnomer here sometimes that if you don't get elected, you're a loser. Well, my goodness, look at what Farage has managed to do. Look at what Jim Allister has managed to do, for that matter. Look at what Sinn Féin did for a long time as a very small party. You can be very influential in politics without actually winning or without being anywhere near government.
Reform would be engaging with the Tory party, and the Tory party, to my mind, is the most right-wing manifestation of the Tory party. So you're saying Reform is to the right of the Tory party. Well, then they're away, way, way far right then.
Well, hold on.
I meant, you know, I've just said that. I didn't mean far right.
So
I just
you're not the only person that said that, because actually a day or two ago the BBC apologised for describing this new party as far right. They said it came in an agency copy, it wasn't spotted. They're not the BNP, they're not Le Pen in France, they are not people who are of that ilk, but they are deeply populist. They are very much on the right wing of British politics, and they are very much in the mould of Nigel Farage. I mean, I think that's somebody who everybody knows. They understand who he is, what he is. There are certain things that he says which are deeply offensive to lots of people, but there is a line beyond which he will not go. I mean, he is certainly not somebody who is calling for violence or who is openly racist or anything of that nature. So there is definitely a line there, and they are within that line. They're not beyond it. But what this reminded me of was something of a very different nature. The last time there was a major electoral link up between a unionist party in Northern Ireland and a British party, and that was UKIMF. That was the Ulster Conservatives and Unionists New Force, which was about as unsuccessful in its outcome at Northern Ireland elections as it was in terms of being said. It's an awful phrase to try to get across to people. And when I was starting as a political journalist in 2009, that was the big thing. That was the big idea. David Cameron was on the up. He was the leader of the opposition. He was about to enter power, and he had struck this deal with Reg MP, the Ulster Unionist leader. And there was a sense at that point within unionism of something that was new, that was fresh, that was exciting. Suddenly, there was a sense that having for years been cut off from the mainstream of British politics, this sort of little Ulsterism in Northern Ireland, they were at the heart of something. This person was going to be Prime Minister. He was potentially going to have somebody like maybe Lord Trimble in the cabinet, maybe an Ulster Unionist MP as a junior minister. It felt different. It felt new. We're not back to there, obviously. This is not a party that's going to be anywhere near government. But what the TUV is trying to say is, look, we're not these little Ulster men or women. We are a party that aspires to be more than simply being cut off here on the edge of the union, on the periphery of the union, in every sense of that word. We are wanting to be at the heart of British politics. Now, there is a potential for them to then slightly change the tone of the DUP, or sorry, of the TUV, to try to change their messaging. There's also a risk. This is a party that has people who will not be seen in warm terms by some traditional TUV voters. I mean, this is a party, for instance, which has a very different relationship with something like alcohol, let's say, which some very conservative TUV members would not be happy to see the leader, you know, sitting in a pub having pints for a very long period. So there are elements there which are tricky for them. And from the DUP's perspective, they're trying to latch on to, for instance, some of the members members of Reform actually backed the NI protocol. They backed the Irish Sea Border at the time when it was going through the European Parliament. So there's lots of potential there for a very different sort of pre-election debate between the unionist parties than there has been over recent years.
Is there anything else from the TUV conference that you picked up?
I think really the sense that they are confident, that they believe that the DUP is in trouble, and it's very hard to read these things. So they obviously are trying to project the best possible light that they can on where they are and where they think the DUP is in contrast to them. When you look at the polling, our poll from just a few days after the deal was done, where the DUP decided they were going back into Stormont, had at that point about a quarter of DUP supporters saying they objected to it. Now, you know, that was a very good result for Geoffrey Donaldson in the context of where it might have been, because he'd been in a position where something like 70% of his supporters in previous polls had said they were against it. So how do you begin to disentangle what people really think when you have that level of a swing in that short space of time? But if that is where things were at that point, 25% of your voters is a lot of people to lose. And who knows where those people are now? That was at the height of the spin about this. The sea border's gone. It's all in the background. We've really won here. It's now pretty clear that that wasn't right. And so do those people move on and say, you know what, we've kind of got enough. It's okay. We need to get Stormont back. There was no alternative. Or do they say, you know what, you told us you wouldn't do this deal in these circumstances, and now it's clear you have. So where does that go? In a first past the post election, I think there's a great temptation for voters to plump for the person they think might win. So they might like person X, but person Y is the only person with a hope of winning. So it's the best sort of election for the DUP to have here. But in a narrow seat like East Belfast, for instance, or potentially even Lagan Valley, it's not comfortable having a hard line, red meat unionist alternative saying you've sold out. And we don't care if you lose a seat, because in the words of the TUV and this new electoral alliance, essentially they don't even recognise the DUP in some terms now as unionist. They see it as a party which has so abandoned its principles that they can't even be recognised in those terms. So it really is a significant fissure in unionism here, where you have people saying, actually, we don't even recognise these people as being unionist any longer.
Well, that sort of contextualises my next question, because I would have thought from a PR point of view, it might have been better for the DUP to simply ignore this link up, but they haven't. They seem well thrown over this altogether.
Yeah, and look, if you look at who they're sending out, they're sending out Gregory Campbell. Gregory Campbell is a fascinating character because he has this public image which is completely detached from the reality of who he is. He has a public image of being gratuitously offensive to nationalism. He does that quite deliberately. I mean, curry my yogurt, talking about Raymond McCartney, who was a Sinn Féin constituency colleague in Foyle, as a failed hunger striker. I mean, really offensive stuff, obviously, deliberately, calculatedly offensive. But actually, when it comes to the big decisions in the DUP, he has always gone with the more moderate course of action. So when there's a deal to go into Stormont with Martin McGuinness in 2007, he's absolutely behind that. When it comes to getting policing and justice devolved, he's behind that. When it comes to getting Stormont back over the Irish Language Act, he's behind that. When it comes to this deal, he's behind that. So he's a far more moderate figure. He's far closer to the centre of gravity in the DUP and to the centre of power in the DUP than his public image suggests. But they've sent him out to say, essentially, these people are splitting the vote. It's the old familiar line in unionism. Unity is strength. Division puts us in peril. And that's what they're going to hammer away at over the next while. The difficulty for the DUP is that while that resonates with a lot of unionists, there's a lot of people that just repels, and it sends them to alliance or they don't come out and vote at all. And so after unionism lost North Down in the last general election, to alliance, there was this remarkable interview where Geoffrey Donaldson was on Good Morning Ulster, I think the next day. And I remember just being startled by this, where he said, essentially, and I don't have his words in front of me, but essentially what he said was, the real problem here is that this shows us what happens when unionism is divided. And I thought that was astonishing, because here you have basically the most unionist seat in Northern Ireland, you know, a place where Sinn Féin almost doesn't exist. And he's saying the only way to win that seat is to have unionist unity. I mean, seriously, so that is the situation unionism, in his view, was in. And the true picture there was a lot of people in North Down who were pro-union, who were unionists, whatever they might describe themselves as, just didn't respond to that. They thought, we don't care about this stuff. And actually, we find it quite offensive being told that this person is the person that you should vote for and you're not going to get any choice. They like choice and they chose Stephen Farry in some cases. And so there is a risk in that, that yes, it might stave off people going to the TUV, but it could send other people who might vote DUP to Alliance or to Home.
But as you say, this has been a refrain we've heard many, many times from unionism about unionist unity. And in fact, the TUV responded, Councillor Alistair Kyle, he said, it's the DUP who have divided unionism. And this backward and forward, we've seen that before.
Yeah, and look, I mean, if you go far enough back, I mean, it's like arguing about who first invaded Ireland, I suppose. I mean, if you go far enough back, everybody was invading everybody. And if you go far enough back in unionism, the only people who can claim, I suppose, not to have split the vote were the old official unionist party, but they really do not exist in the form that they did then. And so therefore, yes, the DUP only exists because they came out to split the unionist vote. I mean, ultimately, if unionist voters want this, they will vote for it. And if they don't, they won't. So they will hear all this, they'll absorb it. And if they're sufficiently angry with Geoffrey Donaldson, they will seek to do here what they did in the Dromore by-election in 2008, try to give the DUP a bloody nose because they're not happy with where they're going.
Before we move on from the TUV, they have picked up a councillor, a former DUP councillor, who had resigned 2 months ago, claiming he faced bullying in the party, which left him in hospital. What's that?
So it's not massively significant, I would say, for this reason. I'm not saying it's completely insignificant. Every party likes to get more members, especially more elected members. David Clark was not elected to the council. He was put onto the council by the DUP. This is Mid and East Antrim Council. Something like a year ago, I can't exactly recall when, but it was around that time, because there had been the death of the DUP MLA, David Hilditch. There had been a DUP councillor who was selected to go into Stormont to replace Mr. Hilditch. And so there was a vacancy on the council and the DUP chose David Clark. He then resigned from the party earlier this year. I spoke to him at that point at length. He was very unhappy. He said, yes, he'd been bullied by the DUP. They very much said that was wrong and that wasn't the case. But he wasn't happy. He felt that he wasn't being allowed to have his voice in the council, that there was too much control from the party telling him what to do, how to act. He didn't like it. But it was very clear that he was very hardline on the protocol on the Irish Sea border. And so therefore, whether he joined Jim Allister or he didn't, he was in that camp, essentially. He's now formalised that. That expands the TUV group on Mid and East Antrim Council, where they're strongest. That's Jim Allister's backyard in terms of North Antrim, albeit this person is in East Antrim in Carrickfergus, Green Island direction. But it's helpful to Jim Allister to be able to say they've made some progress, but it's not transformative.
We come here as friends, as people who have had the benefit of great support from the United States for our own peace process, and we acknowledge that. But in respect of Palestine, they have got it dangerously, badly wrong, and the ceasefire now, that has to be the absolute priority for everybody concerned.
Turning to Washington, we had St. Patrick's Day, we've had our politicians over there. I mean, for Sinn Féin, it was very controversial. I mean, they got an awful lot of flack for that. We've seen a young Sinn Féin councillor getting booed off a stage for this. I doubt, and I'll stand to be corrected if this will mean anything electorally, but they went over and Michelle O'Neill said that she raised her concerns directly with President Biden on what she described as the genocide of the Palestinian people and raised the demand for an urgent ceasefire in Gaza. Jim Allister, funny enough, has asked her to refund taxpayers' money because she used the opportunity to peddle Sinn Féin policy. But
That's not going to happen.
No, it's not going to happen, but nothing really surprising.
Yeah. I mean, it's obviously good politics from Jim Allister to pick up on this, because he's essentially saying you were flown over there at taxpayers' expense on government business. and you're in a joint office with the Deputy First Minister, Emma Little-Pengelly. And so he's trying to both embarrass the DUP and Sinn Féin by saying, did Emma Little-Pengelly agree with this before it was said? If she didn't, then clearly this was Sinn Féin business and they should be funding this. You know, that's as I say, good politics. It's not going to change anything, because the reality of these things is that when a government, when a minister from a government goes, yes, they are primarily representing that government, but they can't entirely divorce themselves from their party, from their background. And that has always been the case with first and deputy first ministers going to Washington. I think from the perspective of the DUP and Sinn Féin, they'll be very happy with how this has gone. It was a real banana skin, especially for Sinn Féin, but not just for Sinn Féin. This could have looked too chummy, too awkward for the DUP. It's always slightly awkward for them. This is Irish America. These are people who don't think like them, who don't want the union to succeed, and they're mixing with them, they're mingling with them. It's obviously a very Irish event. That's the whole point of it. I've been out. It's a remarkable series of days. I mean, you know, you go to some of these events and it's like a Roman feast. I mean, tables groaning under the weight of cheeses and meats and grapes, and you know, there's wine and there's Guinness and whatever. And you do get the great and the good of Washington. You really do, from the president down. They might only be there for 10 minutes, but they're there and they want to be seen to be there. And it's a remarkable thing that Ireland on both sides of the border has this level of access. But the difficulty here, obviously, for Sinn Féin was that it was awkward when they were really denouncing what American weaponry is doing to Gaza. The unquestioning support, almost unquestioning support of Joe Biden for Israel, for Netanyahu there. And that was something that some of their supporters said was beyond appeal, that they should not be in any way legitimizing what's happening there by going along. And I thought there was a really interesting element of this. If you look carefully at the photos that came out, almost all of these photos, Emma Little-Pengelly and Michelle O'Neill look like they're enjoying themselves a great deal. And that's natural. They're smiling for the camera. These are happy shots. And when they're standing with Joe Biden, everybody is smiling except Michelle O'Neill. Now, either she has decided for herself, that's not an accident. You don't accidentally decide to have a straight, stern face when you're standing beside the most important man that you're there to see. Either she's decided for herself, or she's been advised by her party, or someone has suggested, we do not want to be seen to be enjoying ourselves beside this man because he's very unpopular right now back at home. So very successful, but not entirely without difficulties. And certainly if you're people before profit, those photos are going to be very useful in the election campaign.
Absolutely. I should point out that there was no mention of the conflict in Gaza in the First Minister's statement with the Deputy First Minister, that's Michelle O'Neill and Emma Little-Pengelly. That focused on bringing investment to Northern Ireland. But the love-in continues. We can describe it as a love-in.
Oh yeah. I mean, look, There were two ways this could go. The DUP could decide to go back to their old idea of battling with Sinn Féin, putting it up to them, really being an irritant in the system, trying to hold them to account, if you like, from within the system. Or they could have gone back to what Ian Paisley did in 2007 and said, we're going to throw ourselves into this heart and soul, enthusiastically. It's all in. They've gambled. And that's what they've done. Emma Little-Pengelly is the reincarnation, if you like, of Ian Paisley. I mean, she doesn't quite have the same demeanour as him. It's not the Chuckle Brothers. It's not laughing and joking, but lots of smiles, warm words, genuinely warm words, I think it's fair to say, but also politically calculated warm words, where they have decided this is the best chance they have of trying to make this work. And if the DUP can't make this work, it's harder then, I think, for them to justify what they've done in accepting, if you like, the ongoing Irish Sea border. So if you can point to something and say, this government's really successful, we're doing things, we're achieving things, that maybe will get some people over the hump of, well, I don't really like these checks and this bureaucracy at the Irish Sea border. If you've nothing to show for it, you're in a weaker position.
Just jotting down those lines there. Emma Little-Pengelly is the reincarnation of... was it the reincarnation?
I should have thought of that more in more detail. It just came to me there.
Reincarnation of Ian Paisley. I didn't expect that coming, but hey, you've been given out, bud. You've been given out about populism and car parking. And it is something that we, in all seriousness, have discussed about in this podcast before, because the reality of life is, whether it's in my house, whether it's in your house, or that big house on the hill, somebody has to pay for it.
Absolutely. And look, It's really significant that Emma Little Pengelly and Michelle O'Neill are getting on. It's really significant that Michelle O'Neill can go to Windsor Park for a Northern Ireland football match, can stand respectfully for God Save the King. It's really important that Emma Little Pengelly can go to a Camogie club, can have a go at that sport, can be really warm towards it, can say, look, we really want to move on here. It's really important that there's this new sense of what the DUP and Sinn Féin are trying to present to the public. But ultimately, if that's all this is, it will be a failure. That is not going to provide homes for people who are homeless. That is not going to provide food for people who are hungry. That's not going to provide any of the things that a government is expected to provide. And you have a situation here where when you look beneath the surface of these smiling photos, I think there is room for significant concern that actually Stormont hasn't really changed very much. And in some ways it's regressed. It's actually almost more populist than it was before. And if you look at one issue which I've been looking at recently, and lots of people are going to realise this very, very soon, in less than 2 months, everybody who goes to a hospital car park will be able to park there for free in Northern Ireland if they have a reason to be in the hospital, basically. You can't go and park your car there and go shopping, but as long as you have a good reason to be there, you will not be able to be charged for having done so. That was a law that was passed by Stormont just over 2 years ago. There was a bit of a delay clause in it, and so therefore it's only going to come into effect in May. Lots of people will welcome this. Lots of people who work in hospitals, lots of people who visit hospitals, lots of people who have serious conditions, which mean they're there very often, will look at this and say, that's good, that helps me in a practical way. None of us want to pay for anything if we can avoid it. That's perfectly natural and understandable. The difficulty here is twofold. The first is they're losing a lot of money for the health service. About £10 million every year will be given up to pay for this freebie, if you like, for people who previously had to pay for it. The second thing on the finance front is that it's about £5.7 million to just implement it. So they need to get new barriers. They need to get these special ANPR cameras, which can recognise people's number plates, because they're going to restrict you to something like 3 hours so that people don't just dump their cars there and leave them all day. And that's a financial issue. So Stormont says our top priority is health. They're not raising more than the rate of inflation in the rates. And now they're actually cutting what we pay in terms of income that is ring-fenced for health. So lots of people say, I would pay more tax if I was guaranteed it goes to the health service. Here you have a classic example of where that is absolutely guaranteed in a very unusual way. And actually, they're getting rid of it. They're not, you know, even saying we're going to cut it a little bit or give some more people extra room here. They're getting rid of it. But the more significant thing potentially for people that they're going to notice is that some of these hospitals, many of them, haven't built a single extra space. And the worst of these for congestion is the Royal Victoria Hospital in Belfast. Biggest hospital in Northern Ireland, the place where the sickest people go, the place where children go. And it's a site which is overrun with cars as it is. You can't get into that car park. I know, I've been there. I have friends who work there. I know what it's like. It's really bad. And so staff can't park there right now in many cases, even if they've been working in the Royal for years. Patients sometimes can't get in. They're missing appointments. It's a big, big complaint to the Belfast Trust, and they haven't built a single space. So what's going to happen in May? Well, it's predictable. The chaos is going to be worse because some people who previously have got public transport, maybe you've got a elderly smart pass, if you're over 60, probably I shouldn't say elderly for people who are over 60, but somebody who's over 60 can get free public transport. They might think, you know, I'll avail of that. Maybe they believe in the environment. Maybe just they think it'll be more convenient. It'll be free. Now they're being told you can have the convenience of your car, so they might bring their car. And so you've got more services being centralised at sites like the Royal, so more people coming in from further away. No extra spaces. And Stormont has known about this for 2 years and they have done absolutely nothing. I've written about this multiple times and it's just extraordinary.
You can see where the public might be coming from. They might be saying, well, you know, I'm entitled to a free parking space, you know, because I'm going in here for treatment that I need. I'm ill, you know, and that's,
of course,
that's the emotional part of it. And you can see where the politicians might agree with that and they certainly don't want to lose votes over that. But of course, the parking spaces themselves aren't free.
No.
They take up space. They need to be maintained. They need to be built in the first place. And they're on valuable urban land I mean, the cost is huge.
And one of the really interesting things that shocked me when I first looked at this last year is that lots of people, and I would have been one of these people, frankly, assumed that hospital car parking charges were a sort of stealth tax, if you like. They were trying to raise more money for government, for health, for a good reason, but they're trying to raise more money from us in a way that we don't really think of as tax. Brings in £10 million or so. And the reality is that actually, they lose money on car parks in hospitals in Northern Ireland. So they actually cost more, not just to build, to maintain. So resurfacing them, having the barriers operating, you know, having somebody there who can help somebody when they've lost their ticket, whatever it is, it actually costs something like, from memory, the figures are something like, it's about £10 million a year it costs, and they raise about £7.5 million. So they're actually losing money from the health budget into car parks right now. Now they're going to subsidise those even more at a time when Stormont is saying they've declared a climate emergency. I mean, Sinn Féin, which brought this law to the Assembly, although every MLA backed it, there wasn't a single MLA out of 90 who spoke against this. The party which brought this, Sinn Féin, was the party that brought the climate emergency motion to the Assembly 2 years before this. So where is the joined up thinking in this system of government? Rather than taking that money and saying, look, we'll subsidise maybe an extra bus service or whatever it might be, they're actually saying, you know what, get back into your cars because it's cheaper now than it was last year.
I think car parking, on the first instance, it might seem like a rather uninteresting subject for a podcast, but that's one of those issues that just gets to the crux of the matter, spending, taxing, and how we pay for things.
And also, when I looked last week at the charges at the Royal and the matter in Belfast, it costs, I think, £5 a day. Yes, it's £5 a day. If you spend 24 hours in the Royal car park, £5. This is Belfast city centre. The matter, it's £1 for 24 hours. So they're not exactly sticking the arm in. I mean, these are modest charges. Actually, it's far more, as I say, than raising revenue. It's actually far more about trying to encourage people to turn over spaces. So don't leave your car for days on end. Try to encourage them to move on for somebody who actually needs that space. Then I looked at Victoria Square, big shopping complex in the middle of Belfast. It's £26 to park your car for 24 hours. So these are token charges as it is. But now we're getting rid of them completely. And that's fine if we're going to find the money somewhere else. But what has Stormont been doing over the last 6 weeks? They've been saying, it's all the fault of London. They won't send us a big enough check. It's so unfair they're asking us to raise more revenue. And actually, what are they doing? They're raising less revenue when they've been asked to raise more.
Sam McBride, Northern Ireland editor of the Belfast Telegraph. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
This episode of The Bell Tell was produced by myself along with Graham Davidson and Olivia Peden. The clips you heard were from the BBC, UTV and Sky.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.